I'm Nkosinathi Ndlovu, and this is the Tech Central Show. TCS is brought to you by MTN Business. Visit mtnbusiness.co.za to learn more. Now, the electric vehicle market in South Africa has a very positive outlook, with various electric car manufacturers across the world having announced plans to introduce new models into the local market just this year. Among the major factors driving consumer confidence and boosting the rate of EV adoption is the availability of charging infrastructure across the length and breadth of the country, even in the most far-flung and remote of areas. In fact, Tech Central's own Duncan McLeod, towards the end of 2024, took part in a daring cross-country EV road trip from Johannesburg to Cape Town, with some scenic detours that took 4 days to complete. But long before any EV charging networks existed in South Africa, one man dared to take his BMW i3 into the wilderness and drive across country, relying only on his wits and the kindness of strangers to keep his battery going. And he is our guest in studio today. Sean Maitland, you are one of South Africa's original EV enthusiasts. Good day and welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Sean, you are the proud owner of what was at one point Africa's highest mileage BMW i3. And as far as I understand, you decided to take an EV road trip in this vehicle long before charging infrastructure was, you know, commonplace. What prompted you to take on such a daring feat?
So like all good things, there's a backstory, right? So it started off with the usual sort of early day conversations around EVs, you know, who's going to bring you a can of, you know, electricity, you know, can you drive it in the rain type, you know, jokes around it. We actually had a lot of books stuck after a conference at the CTICC in Cape Town, and the quotes were quite hard to get these books back. So after getting some quotes, I, in just sort of a joking manner, told my business partners that I'll go get it with my EV because it'll be cheaper. And this kind of turned into a dare. And then, I suppose the rest is history. So I want to just point out something. You said, like, before there were mainstream infrastructure. Mm. I think it's important to note that, yes, I'm probably an early adopter, but I'm not the first.
Yes.
Okay, I think we must also acknowledge all the other people that drove EVs, whether they built them themselves or a couple of miles before me. Mm-hmm. I certainly have got a lot of publicity given the amount of kilometers that I drove and those early days. And even in those early days, there were already some infrastructure.
Okay.
So I think that is important because the infrastructure has actually been around a lot longer than people think.
Mm. So yes, the infrastructure was around, but I think nowadays you can certainly plan a trip cross country, knowing exactly where you're going to charge, you know, and when. Whereas when you did this trip, things were a little less certain. So can you take me around some of your planning? How did you think through this thing?
So I would use the terms a lot less certain,
yes.
And in fact, not certain at all. So I suppose it's like when you do any sort of trip, right? You would pull up, you know, Google Maps, and you would say, well, I'm going to get there. Certainly traveling on the highways actually do not allow you to easily stop. So my experience is it's still my preferred way of driving. Drive somewhere you haven't driven before, drive a little bit slower, drive roads that are new. I like experiencing new, and it's not for everybody.
Yes.
If you want to get somewhere fast, then obviously the highways are the way to go. But generally speaking, those early days, I would have picked routes that generally allow me access to stop at places. So you would... In the early days of EV, you would kind of back then already have known where some of the infrastructure was.
Mm-hmm.
It certainly wasn't as dependable. You also didn't have the live visibility to the extent that you have today.
Mm-hmm.
So your planning would have been, okay, from which coffee shop to which coffee shop or restaurant am I going to drive?
Yes.
And I'm not a great planner, as you would know, you know, with us, you know, setting up this engagement. Yes. But so I wouldn't have phoned these people beforehand. I kind of figured, you know, most places have got electricity in South Africa. It's just not like the world's not completely rural and, you know, lions running around in the street type of stuff. So you kind of get to a place, you stop somewhere that looks friendly, and you then ask if you could use a plug.
Yes.
And then obviously there's like quite a lot of conversation around that. But that's really how it was. You planned a route that would see yourself drive basically from coffee shop to coffee shop. Mm-hmm. And that was part of the excitement, actually, is that you would then, you know, obviously also think about what you're going to do in that time. So golf is a great way, because golf takes about the same amount of time it takes my early generation i3 to charge.
Yes.
So if you play around, it's about 6 hours out there, and by the time on a normal plug, you would be fully charged. So it's a great combination.
So I mean, nowadays, I think you can do a cross-country trip in a day or two, Johannesburg to Cape Town. How long did this trip take you in total?
So the road, the trip down there was 4 days, and I think trip back was probably 5 days.
Okay.
It wasn't exorbitant, and also I didn't drive and charge and drive and charge. Yes. I also slept places. Like I think that like you kind of need to also be open to the fact that if you're going to do a multi-day trip or any trip for that matter, even driving from Johannesburg to Cape Town is taxing if you drove straight through with any type of vehicle.
Yes.
So that took about 4 days down and actually slightly longer up. Also, remember, back up, I also brought back
some weight.
Like almost 500 kilograms of books. Yes. So the planning needed to be a little bit better, because that heavily affects your consumption and your range. And you're obviously – you tend to also want to rush back, but I deliberately made it slightly longer because I suppose you just don't want to get stuck. So it was long. Could it have been faster? Probably.
Okay.
But it wasn't a race.
Yes.
So my objective was not to test how quickly I can get to Cape Town. I also didn't drive to Cape Town, load the books, and drive back. Yes. I drove to Cape Town. I then visited my sister. Okay. I picked up the books.
Yes.
I spent about a week in Cape Town before I drove back. So the trip, although it became a thing in my life and certainly a significant experience, the driving down to Cape Town wasn't the only thing, if that makes sense.
And one of the other things, I guess, is the people you meet along the way. You talk about trying not to get stuck. And in as much as you tried, you obviously did get stuck at some point. But you're also talking about a time when EVs are not as common. I mean, they're not even common today.
No, they
weren't as common then. So I'm guessing that you're doing a lot of teaching, you know, and trying to get to get people to understand you. But how positive was the response? I mean, if you get somewhere and you need to charge, how often would you get no, please get out of here?
So, because not today, I still have an education session in most places I stop. It's interesting when you drive into towns and maybe people or a person or a group of people have not seen an electric vehicle. Look, the i3 also has a very specific look, futuristic look. So today's electric vehicles don't really – you can't really – you don't always distinguish that they are an EV. You would – they would quite easily pass as just another petrol car or diesel car. And that's neither good nor bad. It's just that the i3 stood out for its design and its look, and it's quirky, and it's not everybody's cup of tea, and that's also okay. So when you generally arrived in a town that haven't seen one, it creates a bit of attention.
Yes.
So the reality is most places would be more than willing to help you. And I think as South Africans, my experience is the number of awesome experience people that you meet and conversations that you have is actually what made the travel so much fun. Exactly the point of asking for a plug And then that conversation that pursues is quite interesting because then it's a deep conversation. Comparing that to stopping at a charger, which is how does the charger work? So the conversation's very different. And I've only had ever one place say no.
Jeez.
No, you may not charge ever in my life. These days, I don't ask that much because there's infrastructure, yes. Way more infrastructure. Mm-hmm. Back then, there wasn't so much knowledge about the topic, etc. So generally, people would ask, how much is it going to cost me, etc., etc., and you had to explain this. And most of the time, South Africans are friendly, and they would say, don't worry about it. You're having our coffee. You're having our food. You're going to be here for 6 hours.
Yes.
Eat as much as you can. That bill will cover the electricity. Yes. I had one guy charge me, I think, 40 rand an hour.
Jeez.
you know, I was quite desperate. It was quite late. But once again, it wasn't no.
Mm.
It was, okay, I'm going to
get something.
I'm going to get something out of it. But I think the person didn't want to make money or extort me. They didn't know. So they picked a number that would make sure that it doesn't cost them.
They're not shortchanged in some way.
So, in most part, I think you can stop anywhere in South Africa. And I think 99 out of 100 people will engage friendly, will help. And people are inquisitive. So you have a conversation then, probably for longer than you need to.
Yes.
You might find that you needed to charge for an hour to just top up to get to the next place, and you end up being there for 2 hours because it's also not one person having a conversation, because now you're standing there. And if you're driving through the smaller towns in South Africa, you'll know, you'll now stop at the coffee shop, and then you're having a conversation with one guy there, and then he kind of goes into the shop and buys something, and then another person starts talking to him. But in the meantime, that guy phoned three other people to tell them about this, and then you find that, like, there's people arriving.
Yes.
People would have driven to, like, the petrol station or the coffee shop to come and see this.
Yeah.
So I think generally people are interested in what's to come, what's new. And an interesting observation for me when we talk about people is that I actually found the people in the non-city areas. I don't like to use the word rural because it's open to interpretation, but the moment you drive out of the big cities, I actually found people to be more receptive to electric vehicles than in the city, which is not what you would think.
Yes.
Like when you talk to somebody on a farm, a farmer, for example, they understand how much it costs to operate their equipment, and they understand how much fuel costs.
Yes.
They understand that they're already running probably energy backups, whether that's generators or solar or whatever. They have other critical stuff already needing electricity.
Yes.
So for them, it's not such a big stretch that you can change. They already have lots of equipment already running on electricity. So for them, the stretch is actually not that far. And strange enough, they don't actually drive that far. They drive a lot between the fence and the shed, but they don't actually drive
long distances,
apart from now and again. So they are more open, and you are there, right? So I was there, so I arrived there with this car. So it's clearly possible to get there.
Yes.
So there's when you're having a superficial academic conversation in the city with somebody, it's almost like they're not willing to try or consider the option that you could drive with this vehicle somewhere. Yes. Look, a lot has changed since those early days, but generally my experience was that people in the areas outside the city were more receptive to the idea that it's coming.
Yes. Because they saw you. You were there.
Exactly.
Yes. One of the roles that you played, I mean, not just on the first trip, but in those early trips, you did say, even if charging infrastructure was there, it wasn't reliable. And actually, early EV enthusiasts would kind of collaborate with the infrastructure guys.
Yes.
You know, you arrive at a charging station, it's not working, and you phone the guy up and he says, listen, I need you to open up there and, you know.
Yes.
Can you tell us some of those stories?
So I think when we look at how we as a community build a better future, right? So I'm generally the internal optimist, probably, you know, scarily so. But you arrive at infrastructure and it doesn't work, okay? Nowadays, you expect it to work, so you might get a bit upset. Mm-hmm. I think in those early days, and even now, I think we must appreciate how much has happened in order to get it where it is today. So I, for example, arrived at the Bloemfontein charger. At that stage, there were only one charger. Now there are more than one charger. Because yes. So first of all, that already is a statement, right? Mm-hmm. So the early days I arrived there, I knew there was going to be a charger. Because I was one of the few people, and I also had questions, I reached out to the BMW guys who put me into connection with some of the infrastructure guys. Mm-hmm. And discussing it back then, I actually had a key. I received a key, a master key from the infrastructure guys. At that stage, really, it was only grid cars. Nowadays, there's multiple players. Yes, there's Rubicon. There's, you know, Zero Carbon Charge. And although, you know, all of the infrastructure players get a lot of criticism, they're all playing a very important part. And we must appreciate that it's still a journey. So why I'm coming back to the grid cars. But so first of all, they had infrastructure. There wasn't no infrastructure, but they were willing to collaborate. And I think that's the partnership that we're talking about. So when I arrived at Bloemfontein, for example, the charger didn't work back then. But also there was no guarantee to me that it was going to work. The guys there, you know, was quite clear. Sean, it probably won't work. You know, we haven't tested it. You're welcome to use it if it works. That was the early days conversation, as opposed to now where there's call centers you can phone if it's down. I mean, it's quite fancy now. It's very different. So I got there, and it turned out the electrician didn't install all the stuff because he didn't know how to connect all the stuff. So then you end up waiting for an electrician. You drink some more coffee, eat some more food. Then you arrive, then you kind of help the electrician figure out where the stuff must go with, you know, some of the infrastructure guys. And then guess what? People solve the problem. So once again, it's not the technology, it's not that, it's the people willing to help you.
Yes.
So then you charge up and then you go to the next town. And I think a lot of the learnings and the feedback. So I think that the winning recipe is as people go to charging infrastructure and they go to new places where they say, I would like infrastructure there, that communication happens, because it just makes it so much easier and so much pleasant. And the voice also, South Africa has unique challenges, right? Like, let's talk about load shedding out of interest. So here's another interesting one. When we talk about the infrastructure considerations, so you can get to it. Let's pick Laingsburg, for example, because I know there's Laingsburg, if it's load shedding, the charger will charge faster than when it's not load shedding, because the generator at the site can provide more power than the grid connection. Uh-huh. However, the internet connection goes down because the mobile towers go down. Uh-huh. Now, in South Africa,
you need to pay.
You need to authenticate and pay to get a charging session. So the South African infrastructure providers have built mechanisms to charge offline. That is not something I have seen anywhere else in the world. So it's a unique adaptation for Africa. Also, if you go to, say, China, there are 20 chargers in the street. If the one doesn't, we can go to the next one. In South Africa, if you're betting on a charger working and you get to that charger and it's not working,
Yes,
it would be super uncomfortable. Your planning for your trip is probably out by 6 hours at least. However, you're only a plug away from a charge. So you should still be nice to the people around you. You should still, you know, just ask for a plug.
And you'll get somewhere.
Yes, and then the other thing is you don't always need to charge full. So you may find that you are full enough, but maybe you just put it on a plug for 30 minutes. So the perception that you need to then sit there for 8 hours or a day to charge full is also not true.
Yes.
So and once again, the people will connect the dots, not the tech.
Mm-hmm.
You smile at people, you greet people, they help you.
Yeah.
It's simple.
And you talk about learnings. And I mean, in your those early days trips, what did you learn about how to drive your car? You've spoken about charging and that you don't need to charge fully. But what other lessons were there about getting the most out of this thing?
So there were lots of lessons. First of all, if the car says 5 kilometers is where how long you're going to go, then you're probably going to go 5 kilometers, even though you think you're going to drive 6.
Yes.
You're
not a magician.
You're not a magician. Yeah. I think I can drive the car really, really well and get it very efficient. Mm-hmm. But I have gotten stuck.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. So the lesson one is probably plan a little bit longer. If you think you have enough charge, maybe drink one more coffee.
Yes.
And if it's borderline, have one more coffee, spend the extra 5 minutes. It's way more comfortable at the coffee shop for 5 minutes than it is next to the road waiting for a tow truck.
Yes.
Okay. The other lesson is that you're never really stuck. Mm-hmm. So when you stop next to the road, when you've run out, yes, it's super uncomfortable, but it's like running out of petrol. You chose to drive that road. You chose to pick it just in time. Mm-hmm. So now you're going to wait for the tow truck or you're going to wait for another friendly person to tow you. Now, here's another thing. You could also just charge your car by having it towed. You could put it into drive and regen charge it. You don't have to have a plug.
Yes.
Also, you could just plug it into a generator if you wanted to. I mean, it's not very efficient and it's going to be very long, but it's not the end of the world if you get stuck. I think that's the point.
Yeah.
Other thing is you need to learn if you're going to do experimental stuff like I did where you wander off and push it to the limit, that before you run out, maybe drive off and go find a plug. Mm-hmm. Don't decide when you're out that you must find a plug.
Okay.
So driving to a farm, I mean, I'll tell you a bit of story about that, but let's come back to the actual question. So the other lessons is to drive further. You have to actually, let's call it simple terms, brake less. So everybody will sell you the idea that regenerative braking will charge your car when you are braking, charge your car when you are going downhill. It is true. It's not a lie. It's true. However, what people don't realize is that you're sacrificing your momentum and you lose energy when you transfer it from the momentum into electric or back into the electricity into your battery. So if you were to not regen at all on a trip, you will probably get about 5 to 10% more distance.
Oh, okay.
So also, driving extremely slow is also not always that effective. Mm-hmm. And driving fast obviously isn't that effective. So you could quite easily get 20% or so more from a distance from
cruising, just, essentially.
Yes, and curbing your acceleration.
Yes.
Also, stupid things like make sure your tires are inflated correctly. I mean, this is not EV stuff. This is 101 of maintaining your vehicle. So when you embark on a road trip, follow the instructions of your manufacturer on what the inflation of the tire should be, because they have worked out that that is the best and safest. Mm. But best also means better fuel economy, whether you're driving petrol, EV, gas, whatever it is.
Yes.
With EVs, you, however, have a lot more control. And what I mean by that is that you're not burning or using energy for most part when you are idle, unless you're running air cons and stuff. Whereas with traditional fossil fuels, you have. So the big lessons are, I mean, do the basics right. Like just plan. Do the basics right by preparing for your trip. Also, be prepared that something unexpected could happen.
But I think you've mentioned something to me before about how as the infrastructure has grown, so has the culture. I mean, your early day experiences are a lot about people, interactions, connection. Yes. But as the infrastructure has grown, you found that your own attitude has also changed. How so?
Yeah, look, maybe I'm just an adrenaline junkie and like range anxiety. I mean, that could be one option. But there's less excitement about the trips because there's a charger every 100 kilometers now on the freeway. And even if I can't charge at that one, I'll get to the next one just about. So there's a lot less risk in taking on the travel. Mm-hmm. Also, I have found myself getting into the habit when I'm going somewhere to make the charges dictate my route. Oh. So I have personally become less adventurous in wandering off. Okay. So I think there's a combination of that. I also think now I have an expectation that when I get to a charger, it's going to work.
Yes.
So now I rush and I'm late for stuff. Mm. And now that the infrastructure isn't what I expect. Mm. So it's the difference between what I expect and what's now the reality. Whereas previously I didn't expect anything. I expected potentially getting stuck and sleeping in my car until a farmer helps me out.
And you planned around that.
Yeah. Yes, that was the plan. Yeah. And then pleasantly somebody came to the party and helped me out. Mm-hmm. I think there's another thing, right? So back then it was completely new. Mm-hmm. So there was a novelty around it. So maybe I felt special when I arrived in a place and everybody made a hoo-ha about it. Yes. But maybe also just because it was so special, people actually were willing and more friendly towards it. I do think as items become more or technology becomes more mainstream, it's less interesting, it becomes run of the mill, and people are most likely overlooking it. So I think you are less likely to get a good Samaritan to help you out with a plug at a charger than in the middle of nowhere.
Yes.
So as the infrastructure grows and as EVs become more commonplace, I think a lot of that conversation will die because it's not relevant anymore, right? It's not new. People have read about it on whatever medium they read about it. They've watched your show. Mm-hmm. Like people then, it's not new anymore. Yes. So it's not special. So, and it doesn't have to be.
Yes.
I think the point is just that's how it evolved. And for me, it's taken away some of the excitement. Mm-hmm. So certainly I'm planning to drive some other random place where this doesn't there's no infrastructure again. I'm going to drive up to Namibia and then across to Livingston and maybe up to Rwanda. Maybe that'll be sort of a send off for this i3.
Yes. How much mileage does it have on it these days?
So my i3 now this week has got 365,000 kilometers on it.
Jeez. And how much range are you getting? Are you still getting that same old?
No. Yeah. So I'm not getting the range I originally got.
Yeah.
The battery has degraded a bit, but not to sort of even my own expectations. So the battery's probably degraded about 27%.
Yeah.
Over.
And that's from how much? Like, what's the hard number? What were you getting?
Okay, so hard number. When I bought the vehicle, I bought it as a 3,000 kilometer demo vehicle.
Yes.
Okay. Back then I paid 509,000 for it, and I think I've made my money back from free charging from BMW alone, probably.
Okay.
And don't tell them. At that point, the promise or the expectation was 130 kilometers.
Okay.
So you must understand the technology has evolved a lot. Yes. Now people are like, I'm not sure if my 400-kilometer EV will make
it. It's got the range,
I'm going, that is way more than you need ever.
Yes.
But for some people, that's not enough. And for some people, it'll never be enough. But let's 130 kilometers. I can now get 100 kilometers.
Oh, okay.
Okay. If I drive it really, really well, I could probably stretch it to 110. Mm. I did, however, between Willowmore and George managed to get 166 kilometers out of it back in the day.
Yeah.
It's actually not down. It's actually more of a flat road.
Uh-huh.
Excuse me. And it was early morning. I was driving really, really well. So temperature also plays a part because the cars have cooling and heating of the actual batteries, not just the interior cabs and stuff, but also if you don't regen and you drive really, really well, you can extend it. So that was the most I ever got out of it. And then as you get into Georgie, the top of the Otanikwa, and then by the time I was quite disappointed, actually, I think I was almost out. I think I arrived at the crest before you go down into George. I was, I think, at like 1.5%. By the time I got to the dealer at the bottom, I was at 12%. And I'm like, okay, I needed that 12% earlier.
Back there, yes.
But that's just how it goes, right? So you learn how to drive the car. I think the interesting thing is everybody always fixates around range. How far can you go? So I do think, though, the vehicle isn't what it was when it was new. But I have driven the car. I bought it around the 2016 mark, and I've driven it for quite some time, done really exciting stuff with it, 360,000 kilometers. I've had massive savings, obviously, from a money perspective. But the car is really fun to drive, so I enjoyed the car. We spoke about it a bit, you know, off air around like when you buy cars, it shouldn't be electric or petrol. It should be what you want to do with it, have fun with it. So the EV experience has definitely saved me money, etc. But the car itself has really been very easy to own.
Okay.
And the mileage was good enough for me. Yes, it's not ideal to drive to Cape Town with a car that can do 100 kilometers an hour. You are kind of pushing it to the limit to get from charger to charger. And if you were to drive from Joburg to Cape Town or Cape Town to Joburg, if that was your intended activity, you will be spending most of your time charging.
Yes.
That is just how it is. If your plan is to see places, actually 100 kilometers is plenty. There are more than enough places in South Africa and in the rest of Africa where you could stop every day. Think about it practically. So let's say you get up, you charge last night, you get up, you unplug from your house. First of all, you don't need a special charger at your home.
Yes.
Three-point plug. So that's the first step people don't understand. Normal plug it into the wall. Kind of like the old laptop charger, those big things. But it's a carry. You take it with you with an extension cord. The manufacturer will tell you don't plug it into the extension cord. I'm not saying you shouldn't follow the manufacturer. But my own experience is extension cord works quite all right. Just make sure you follow safety protocols, the whole stuff. But the reality is if you're going to get stuck, it's good to have, you know, a little bit of extra reach to get to a plug.
Yes.
And you unplug the plug, you roll up the stuff, you hit the road. Okay. You drive 100 kilometers and you take your family to a little daytime resort. You ask them for a plug, you plug in, kids play, slide down the slides. 6 hours later, everybody's tired. They anyway need to go somewhere else.
To rest, yeah.
Your car's fully charged. You have another 100 kilometers you can drive. Now you drive to where you're going to sleep tonight.
Yeah.
You drive there. You've done 200 kilometers without it really impacting your life.
Yes.
And you had no need for public infrastructure. Okay. Is that ideal? Maybe not for some. Is it possible? Absolutely. And then you've done 200 kilometers. Joburg to Cape Town is only 1,200 kilometers. That's max 6 days.
Yes.
Then you're not even doing difficult stuff. You just driving in the morning 100, doing a fun activity, driving 100. That's 200.
You're not even pushing yourself.
No, you're not even attempting to rush.
Yes.
If you wanted to, you could probably drive 200, do another activity and drive another 100. So you could get to 300. Now you're down to not even 4 days, really.
Yes. And these days you have DC fast charging. I mean, you get to some places and...
No, of course. I mean, so even back then, the Bloemfontein charger that I was speaking about early on was a fast charger. So it would take 50 minutes to charge that 100 kilometers back. The newer cars can do 150 kilowatts. My car could only do 50 kilowatts or still can do it. I mean, it's still running. It's still operating.
Yes.
And you can top up quite quickly. But once again, that assumes you're in a rush somewhere. So just in a normal going to activities, here's another thing. You the money what you would have spent on petrol, you could spend on staying over. So I've always – and once again, that's not going to get you to Cape Town quickly. But once you start adding costs of fuel and even charging, if you're going the fast charging route, you pay a premium for fast charging.
Okay.
When most likely the guest house will just give you a plug. And you'll cost them not even $100.
Yes.
And then they will probably not even bill it on your bill.
Yes.
And
you get to relax.
And you get to relax,
be in a comfortable space.
And you get to see new stuff. So, and also you'll have a conversation because they will want to know what about this plug thing. And they will want to know, well, how do I get more people with EVs to come to my place? And then they'll start talking to you about chargers. And then they'll start talking to you about water.
Yes.
And if it's like proper farmers, they will start asking you about electric tractors, and they will start telling you what they saw on something.
Yes.
Because they already have a drone. No, but this is the thing. So a farmer in the middle of nowhere already has drones surveying his land, telling him if the plants are healthy or unhealthy. Mm. He's already dealing with charging the drones.
Yes.
So
again, going back to that city slicker mentality and what you think is happening out there. Yeah.
Yes.
Some really high-tech things going on.
Yeah. So let's fast forward a little bit. Mm. The same chargers that are charging cars in future will probably also be a place for drones to stop to charge, when they're doing power line inspections or security.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we all think it's high tech. Yes, it is. And we think we're doing it in the city, but the farmers are already doing a lot of this stuff. People in communities producing food are already doing a whole lot of high tech stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And when you stop there and you talk to them, it becomes, this is just another thing for them.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, coming back to the car, I think the range, I don't think the range itself matters that much. It's whether you are willing to pay the price for the range that you always have available is rather the conversation. Most part nowadays, specifically post-COVID, I hardly drive anywhere, so that's why my mileage haven't gone to 500,000, and I'll have to make up some road trips to do that. But the reality is I maybe drive 20 k's a day.
Mm.
Now, I don't need public charging for that.
Yes.
It's nice if there's public charging there, because when I want to do a road trip, I can do it. When I want to drive to from where I stay to Langebaan, I can go do a day trip, charge up quickly. It's not a thing.
Yes.
I don't have to look for a charge. I don't have to have a conversation around the plug.
Where do you see the future of electric mobility? And I use the term electric mobility strategically because we are so focused on cars, right?
Yes.
EVs, driving, but there's more to this, right? It's an entire industry. What's your take on where it's going?
So first of all, my take is, why are we moving around? Like, let's start with, why do we need to move? Okay, so if you don't need to move, then there's no need for mobility. Let's take that out of the equation. Okay, so but let's, realistically, you are going to still move stuff. So people commonly, it's quite commonplace for people to look at electric scooters, electric bikes. You're looking at people doing deliveries to your house with electric bikes. Mm. And those things are great. But what about personal mobility? What about electric skateboards? I think there's a guy in Cape Town that's done thousands of kilometers on a skateboard.
Mm.
That might be a conversation for you. But the point is that those are things people are already doing. There are interesting gadgets, let's call them gadgets, that people have developed. Like, you could just stand on like almost like a laptop size board and it can take you somewhere. Now, it's not meant to challenge a car, but let's talk about safer roads, more fun. So I live close to the beach. I'm obviously selfish, relatively close, not beach view type stuff, but I live close enough that I can walk a couple of streets down and I can enjoy the marine sort of walk, and a lot of other people do. And the speed limits already in that area has been reduced to 50 kilometers an hour. Why I'm bringing this up is because we want people to be healthier. We want people to enjoy what they have around them. So if you start allowing people to walk more, use public transport more, use personal mobility more, and how that then links into, you should be able to charge your skateboard at this potentially the same place somebody charges their car. So we should be having those discussions. Generally, people and machines will find the most optimal path. So if walking is the most optimal thing, then you should walk. So that's mobility. It's not e-mobility, but it's mobility. I'm walking.
Yes.
So maybe that's the way I'm seeing it, is yes. that maybe the street, in Stadler Street there on Blobeckstrand, should be no cars allowed.
Yeah.
Because that's the right answer.
Okay. So again, it goes, you're actually asking a question. You're saying it's not about e-mobility. It's about mobility as in total. Yeah. What is the problem we're trying to solve, and what's the most optimal solution, electric or not?
Exactly. And what is the best use of our resource, whether that be time, money, energy?
Yes. And whatever form that energy may be stored in. Sean, thank you very much for your time, your stories, and your insights. And we'll see you next time.
Thank you for having me.